present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey in Murder Must Advertise by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted for radio by Alastair Beaton, with Alan Cuthbertson as Chief Inspector Parker, Lyndon Brooke as Major Milligan, Beth Morris as Diane de Momery, Edward D'Souza as Mr. Tallboy, and Brian Wilde as Mr. Garrett. Episode 5, Sudden Decease of a Man in Dress Clothes.
Lord Peter Wimsey has uncovered a link between the death of Victor Dean, a copywriter with Pym's publicity, and Major Todd Milligan, an unsavory member of London's smart set. Wimsey suspects that Milligan's house is being used for the distribution of illegal drugs. Pretending to be Mr. Breeden, an unscrupulous copywriter from the same office as the late Victor Dean, Wimsey succeeds in gaining the confidence of Todd Milligan.
All right, Breeden, here's what I know. The distribution of the dope is all work from that advertising place of yours, Pym's Publicity.
How fascinating, Milligan. And how do you know?
I found it out from a man who's dead now. I was dining with him one night at the Carlton. He was a bit lit up. A chap came in with a party, and this man said to me, "Know who that is?" "Not from Adam," I said. "Well, it's old Pym," he said, "the publicity agent." And then he laughed and said, "If he only knew what his precious agency was doing, he'd have a fit." "Well, how's that?" I said. "Why," I said, "he didn't, you know, all this dope traffic has worked from there." Naturally, I started to ask him how he knew and all about it. But he suddenly got an attack of caution, and I couldn't get another word out of him. And the next evening, he was run over by a lorry and killed.
How remarkably well timed.
Yeah, I thought so myself. Made me rather nervous.
But how does Victor Dean come into it?
Ah, there I dropped a bad brick. Diane brought him along one evening, and when Diane introduced Dean and said he worked at Pym's, I thought he must be the man. And apparently he wasn't. But I'm afraid he got an idea about the thing from me. And after a bit, I found out he was trying to horn in on my show, and I told Diane to shut down on him.
And shortly after that, he fell down a staircase.
Yes. But I didn't push him down. You needn't think that. I didn't want him snuffed out. I only wanted him kept out of the way. Dean was too much of a chatterer.
So, what you want, I take it, is the way the trick's worked and the name of the man who works it. Well, I dare say I can find that out for you. How about terms?
Well, my idea is that we use the information to get into the inside ring ourselves and each strike our own bargain.
Just so. Well, it's been a jolly useful little talk. I'll be in touch with you, Milligan.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.
A slippery customer, that one.
Have you fixed things up with him, Todd?
Yes. He's a twister, Diane, but I'll make him see it'll pay him to be straight with me.
You'd much better leave him alone.
Oh, you're talking rubbish.
I've warned you. Not that I care a damn what happens to you. You're getting on my nerves, Todd. It's going to be great fun to see you come to smash. But you'd better keep off that man.
Thinking of selling me, are you?
Why do you have to be so vulgar, Todd?
Well, what's the matter with you, then?
I'm frightened, that's all. It's unlike me, isn't it?
Frightened? That advertising crook.
Really, Todd, you're a fool sometimes. You can't see a thing when it's under your nose. It's written too big for you to see, I suppose.
You're drunk. Just because you haven't managed to get off with this joker of yours...
Shut up! Get off with him. I'd as soon get off with a public hangman.
I dare say you would. Any new sensation would do for you. Well, what do you want, Diana? Row? Because if so, I'm afraid I can't be bothered to oblige you.
No. I'm through with you, that's all. I'm cold. I'm going to bed. Todd?
What?
Did you kill Victor Dean?
I did not.
A meal begun with Blagg's tomato softens every husband's heart-o. Yes, that's not bad. Hubbies hold those wives most dear who offer them Blagg's turtle clear. Yeah, even better. Fit for an alderman, serve it up quick. Rumpty, Blagg's turtle thick. Yeah, hello, tall boy, what can I do for you? Don't tell me New Tracks has developed any more innuendos.
What? Oh, no. Do you play cricket, Breeden?
Well, I used to play for Ox. I played a good deal of country house cricket in the old days, don't you know? But I am rapidly qualifying to be called a veteran. Why?
I've got to scrape up an 11 for a match against Brotherhoods. We play them every year. They always beat us, of course, because they've got their own playing fields and play together regularly. But Pym likes it a bit done. He thinks it fosters fellow feeling between client and agent and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, when does it come off?
Saturday fortnight.
Well, I dare say I might be able to keep my end up for a bit if you can't get anybody better.
You anything of a bowler?
No, nothing, I'm afraid.
Ah, better with the willow than the leather, eh?
Well, I suppose so, yes.
Right. You wouldn't care to open the batting with Ingleby, would you?
Well, I'd rather not. Put me down somewhere near the tail.
Just as you like.
Who captains this 11?
Well, I do as a rule. At least we always ask Hankin or Pym, just out of compliment, but they generally decline with thanks. Well, righto. I'll just buzz round and see that the other's okay. Mr. Garrett, you wouldn't be interested in
playing... If it's the cricket match tour, boy.
Well, yes, it is, as a matter of fact.
Why wasn't I selected from the very start?
Well, you were. That is, you would have been, but, well, you know, Breeden being new and...
What you mean is somebody's scratched and now you need me.
Well, yes, somebody did drop out.
Look, if you had come to me in the first instance, Tallboy, and put the matter to me in a friendly way, I should say nothing about it. I like Mr. Breeden, and I appreciate that he's had advantages that I haven't had. He's a very gentlemanly fellow, and I should be very happy to make way for him. But to drop me just like that and then come running, I do not care for having things done behind my back in a hole-and-corner fashion.
Come, come, Garrett, you're not Jack Hobbs, you know. Of course, I don't know about you, but I've always been accustomed to have these things settled by whoever was appointed to select the team, and to play or not, according as I was put down.
Oh, yes, well, you would say that. I'm quite aware, Torbo, that I never was at a public school, but that is no reason why I shouldn't be treated with ordinary common courtesy. And from those who have been to real public schools, I get it, what's more. You may think a lot of Dumbleton, but it isn't what I would call a public school.
And what would you call a public school, Garrett?
Eton and Harrow. And, well, Rugby and Winchester and places like those. Places where they send gentlemen's sons to.
Oh, do they?
Excuse me, but...
I suppose you're sending your sons to Eton, then, eh, Garrett?
You cad! You unspeakable swine! Get out of here, or I'll kill you!
What the devil's the matter with
get
you?
Get out!
Mr. Tallboy, if I could have a word with you for a moment. Mr. Tallboy, what possessed you to say that to Mr. Garrett?
What do you mean, Mr. Hankin? I really think it's
none
of your business.
Didn't you know that Mr. Garrett has only got one boy?
Well...
He's feeble-minded.
No, I didn't know. How should I be expected to know anything about Garrett's family? Oh, good God, I'm damn sorry and all that, but why must the fellow be such an ass? He's got a mania about public schools. Eton, indeed. I don't wonder the boy's feeble-minded if he takes after his father.
Incredible luck you do have, Peter.
Not so much luck, Charles. Good guidance, that's all. Anyway, I sent the fair Diane an anonymous letter, solemnly warning her against Cousin Breeden, and informing her that if she wants to know the worst about me, she had only to inquire at my brother-in-law's address. You know, it's a curious thing, Charles, but people cannot resist anonymous letters. It's like free sample offers. They appeal to all one's lower instincts.
You're a devil. One of these days you'll get into trouble. Suppose Milligan had recognized you.
I prepared his mind to accept a striking resemblance.
I wonder he didn't see through it. Family resemblances don't usually extend to details of teeth and so on.
I never let him get close enough to study details.
Well, that ought to have made him suspicious.
No, because I was rude to him about it. He believed me all the time simply because I was rude. Everyone suspects an eager desire to curry favor, but rudeness, for some reason, is always accepted as a guarantee of good faith. The only man who ever managed to see through rudeness was St. Augustine, and I don't suppose Milligan reads the confessions. Besides, he wanted to believe me. He's greedy.
Well, no doubt you know your own business. But about this Victor Dean affair, do you really believe that the head of this particular dope gang is on Pym's staff? It sounds quite incredible.
Which is an excellent reason for believing it. I don't mean that in a credo quia impossibile sense, but merely because the staff of a respectable advertising agency would be such an excellent hiding place for a big crook. The particular crookedness of advertising is so very far removed from the crookedness of dope trafficking.
Why? As far as I can make out, all advertisers are dope merchants.
So they are. Yes, now I come to think of it, there is a subtle symmetry about the thing which is extremely artistic. All the same, Charles, I must admit that I find it difficult to go the whole way with Milligan. I have carefully reviewed the staff of Pym's, and I have so far failed to find anyone who looks in the least like a Napoleon of crime.
But you seem convinced that the murder of Victor Dean was an inside job. Or do you now think that some stranger was hiding on the roof and did away with Dean because he was on the point of splitting on the gang? I suppose an outsider could get access to Pym's roof.
Oh, easily. But that wouldn't explain the catapult wiped clean of fingerprints.
Nor the attack on me.
Not if the same person that killed Dean attacked you too.
Meaning that it might have been Willis. Well, I take it that Willis is not the Napoleon of crime anyhow.
Willis ain't a Napoleon of anything. Mm. Nor, I fancy, is the chap with the catapult. If he had been, he'd have had the common sense to use his own catapult and destroy it afterwards. As I see him, Charles, he is a person of considerable ingenuity but limited foresight. A person who snatches at the first thing that is offered him and does his best with it, but lacks just that little extra bit of consideration that would make the thing a real success. He lives from hand to mouth, as you might say. I dare say I could spot him without much difficulty, but that's not what you want, of course, is it? You'd rather have the Napoleon of the dope traffic, wouldn't you? If he exists, that is.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, we've had one lead. Could be interesting. Chap by the name of Hector Punchin.
What an odd name.
The whole business is darned odd. This chap Punchin, who's a reporter with the Morning Gazette, goes into a Covent Garden pub called the White Swan. There he chances upon an extremely drunk gentleman in dress clothes who proceeds to barge into him, cling on to him for support, and generally paw him pretty thoroughly all over.
Unpleasant.
Well, young Punchin didn't think much about it until he got home and found a packet of white powder in his pocket. He assumed it was bicarb of soda or something. Well, of course, it wasn't.
And he thinks the drunken gentleman in dress clothes popped it into his pocket?
Exactly. Now, either it was just a drunken mistake by some dope maniac,
or else Punchin accidentally stumbled on a whole distribution system.
Possibly.
Ah.
The thing is, what are we to do? We could raid the pub, of course, but I don't think that would be advisable. We probably shouldn't find anything, and we should merely give the alarm to no purpose. We want the top people. Well, take even this man Milligan, who's a pest of the first water. Suppose we punish him here and now. They'd only start again with a new distributor and a new house for him to run his show in, and what would anybody gain by that?
Exactly. But how much better off will you be if you catch the man above Milligan? The same thing will apply.
I don't know, Peter. Well, there's no good worrying about it. My job's to catch the heads of the gangs if I can, and after that, as many as possible of the little people. I can't overthrow cities and burn the population.
'Tis the last judgment's fire must cure this place. Calcine its clods and set its prisoners free.
At the present moment, Peter, I must say you're not being very helpful. You've been investigating a crime, if it is a crime, for some weeks now, and the only tangible result is a broken collarbone for me.
Excuse me, Inspector.
What is it, Constable?
There's a Mr. Punchin on the phone for you, sir. Says he needs to speak to you urgent, sir.
Oh, put him on. Hello? Chief Inspector Parker. Yes? What? Oh, where? Right. Where are you now? A cafe. Where? Yeah. Right, I've got that. I'll have two men go straight there. Oh, now listen, Punchin. If your suspect leaves the cafe before my men get there, keep on his tail and phone the cafe with your whereabouts as soon as you can. Right, good man. That was Punchin.
So I gathered.
Thinks he spotted the man who slipped him the dope. Saw him outside the Morning Gazette offices this morning, buying an early paper or something. Been chasing him ever since, apparently. He couldn't get to a phone before. Must push off. Cheerio, Peter.
Bung ho. Oh, Charles?
Yes?
And you said I had incredible luck?
Well, according to the note, Sergeant, Punchin's had his breakfast in this caff, and he's off again. Says he'll phone us here as soon as he gets a chance. He thinks the man knows he's being followed.
Yeah, that's an amateur all over. Of course he lets the bloke know he's being followed. If one of those newspaper fellas was a blue bottle and had to follow an elephant, he'd get buzzing in the elephant's ear so as he'd know what he was up to.
That's very good, Sarge.
Sergeant Lumley to you, Constable. 10-1 punch to lose him for keeps now. Getting us pushed off here without our breakfasts.
Well, there ain't no reason why we shouldn't have our breakfasts, seeing as we are here.
Oh, I don't mind if I do. If only we're allowed to eat our kippers in peace. But you mark my words, you'll start ringing up again before we has time to swallow a bite. Parker says that if Punchin rings up from somewhere else, we'd better take a taxi. Oh, and my kippers. Top. Save time, he says. How does he think we're going to pick up a taxi here? Nothing but blinking trams.
Oh, order the taxi now, so as to be in readiness, like.
What? And have it ticking up the threepences for nothing? Think they'll call that legitimate expenses? Not half. You pay that out of your own pocket, my man. That's what they'll say, the lousy skimflints.
Well, have your grub.
I hope it's a good kipper, that's all. Looks oily, it do. I hope it's cooked. Eat a kipper what ain't properly cooked through, and you get kipper on your breath for the rest of the day. Ow! Beats me why God Almighty wanted to put such a lot of bones into them things.
You didn't ought to question the ways of God Almighty.
You keep a civil tongue in your head, my lad, and don't go forgetting what's due to my position.
Well, there ain't no position in the eyes of the Almighty. If it pleases him to make you a sergeant, that's one thing. But it won't do you no good when you comes before him to answer to the charge of questioning his ways with kippers. Come to think of it, in his sight, you and me is just the same as worms, with no bones at all.
You ought to know better than to talk about worms when a man's eating his breakfast. It's enough to take anyone's appetite away. And let me tell you, Constable, worms or no worms, if I have any more lip from you... Oh, drat that telephone. What did I tell you? Hello? Yes? Where?
No.
You sure? Right, we're on our way. Right, Constable, let's go.
Right, Sergeant.
Reckon he's heading for South Kensington Tube Station. Here, stand aside now, please. Officers of the law, where's a doctor? Eagle, send for a doctor, quick, and ring Parker.
Right, Sergeant.
You, tell the station master to turn off the electricity. Hurry up. This one's going to be all right. I reckon the other one's done for, though.
He's coming round.
How are you feeling now, sir?
Bloody... What happened?
Why, sir, a poor gentleman fell off the platform and took you with him.
Oh, yes, of course. Is he all right?
Afraid not, sir. Here, take a pull of this, sir. Brandy. Gently now. Easy. That's it.
That's better. All right, don't fuss.
Come on now, stand back there, right back.
Limbs all correct. Head apparently sound, though it aches like hell. Ribs, not so sure about those. Something gone there, I'm afraid. Pelvis intact, thank goodness.
The doctor will be here in a minute, sir.
Doctor be damned. I'm a doctor myself. Spine's all right. I don't think anything's broken to speak of.
Well, very glad to hear that, sir.
It's the footboard of the train that got me, I fancy. I remember being rolled round and round like a pat of butter between two what's-its-names. And I saw the wheels of the train get slower and slower and stop, and I said to myself, this is it, you're for it, my lad. Time stopped, and this is eternity. But I see I was mistaken.
Happily so, sir.
Wish I'd been able to stop that other poor devil, though. Dead, is he?
Yes, sir, very. Now, if you could just tell me, sir, exactly how all this occurred...
Damned if I know myself. All I know is, I was standing just about here when the fellow passed me. I noticed he was looking rather queer. Heart subject, I should think. He suddenly stopped and then came towards me. I caught hold of his arm and then he lurched over with all his weight and dragged me over with him. And then I can't remember anything but the noise of the train and the tremendous size of the wheels and the feeling of having the breath squeezed out of me. I must have... dropped him, I suppose.
Oh, no wonder. Now, if I could just have some details, sir. Your name?
My name's Garfield. Dr. Herbert Garfield.
You all right, sir?
Yes, I'm all right. I can stand. Here's my card, if you should need to contact me.
Oh, very well, sir, if you feel certain.
Yes, thank you. I do.
All right, stand back there now.
Inspector Parker's on his way, Sarge.
Yes, but where on earth is Punchin?
How's Punchin, by the way, Charles?
Still unconscious. Mm. Got slugged rather badly. We're obviously dealing with a gang that's totally ruthless.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree. And the drunken gentleman in the dress clothes was well and truly mangled by the train. Hmm?
Not much doubt about that, I'm afraid. Punchin lost him near the station, and Lumley and Eagles arrived just after he'd fallen onto the tracks.
Fallen?
What do you mean by that?
Well, when a man you've been chasing elaborately all over London has the impudence to be killed just when you are on the point of catching him, when he turns out to have no tailor's name on his clothes and nothing to identify him by, when his face is smashed into a pulp so you cannot usefully circulate his photograph, Well, it's all extraordinary bad luck, ain't it?
All we've got to go on is a laundry mark on his shirt. No doubt we shall end up by having to circularize the laundries.
This, I presume, is his top hat. Mysteriously uninjured.
Oh, it had rolled beyond the train onto the farther line.
Ah. And here again the maker's gold imprint, you see, has been removed. How absurd, Charles. I mean, one does not, well, at least you and I and this gentleman do not, consider the brand to be the guarantee of quality. For us, the quality guarantees the brand. There are two hatters in London, Charles, who could have made this hat. You have doubtlessly already observed that the crown is markedly dolichocephalic, while the curve of the brim is also characteristic. Send one of your sleuths to each of these establishments and ask for the customer with the elongated head who has a fancy for this type of brim. Don't waste your time on laundry marks, which are at best tedious and at worst deceptive.
Thanks, Peter. I thought you might be able to put your finger either on the hatter or the tailor.
So you see, Breeden, unless we come up with a really fresh campaign to sell Whifflets, their rivals are absolutely going to run away with the market.
Yes, I see that, Mr. Hankin, but what is it exactly that Puffin Cigarettes are doing that's wreaking all this ghastly havoc?
They're giving away aeroplanes.
Aeroplanes?
Yes. You see, in every packet of Puffins, they're enclosing a coupon bearing the name of a component part of a popular little touring plane suitable for amateur use. When you've collected your complete set of parts, numbering 100, you send in your coupons together with a brief essay on the importance of air-mindedness for British boys. The writer of the best essay each week becomes the recipient of a private plane and a course of free instruction enabling him or her to take out an air pilot's certificate.
Good gracious me.
Well, as you've probably seen, the scheme is supported by heavy advertising. The scheme's also got the support of several notable airmen, whose faces adorned with flying helmets are grinning out from some newspaper every day with their considered opinions that puffins are doing valuable work in helping to establish British supremacy in the air.
And Whifflets are understandably upset, what?
I'll say they're upset.
I'll bet they are.
They want to know why Pims didn't have the idea first.
Well, what are we going to do about it,
We've got to cope. We must head them off the idea of a rival aeroplane scheme. The country isn't ready to be cluttered up with aeroplanes, and fathers and families are beginning to complain about it.
Quite right.
Even today, few fathers care about having private aeroplanes delivered to their daughters in quiet suburban areas. What we want is a new scheme, on similar lines, but with more family appeal. But it must boost Britain. We've got to have that patriotic note.
Oh, righty-ho. Well, I'll try and work something out.
Very good.
Whifflets. If you want... No, that's no good. Now, let me see. If that's what you want, you can whiffle for it. Oh, I say, that's not bad. Or perhaps, Oh, yes, even better. All You Want by Whifflin'. Yes, that might work. Breeden here.
Peter, it's Charles. Have you seen the evening paper?
No, working later, lad. Or rather, Whifflin late, to be more accurate.
Milligan's dead.
What?
Yes, killed by a lorry which skidded onto the pavement.
My God, they work quickly.
In that episode of Murder Must Advertise, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Whimsey, Ian Carmichael. Chief Inspector Parker, Alan Cuthbertson. Major Milligan, Lyndon Brooke. Diane de Marmory, Beth Morris. Mr. Tallboy, Edward de Souza. Mr. Garrett, Brian Wilde. Mr. Hankin, Frank Williams. Sergeant Lumley, Danny Schiller. PC Eagles, Gordon Clyde. Dr. Garfield, Philip Voss. Murder Must Advertise was adapted by Alastair Beaton from the book by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Martin Fisher.